to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Salam, dear listeners, and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. After the segment Morning Glory, now it's time for Musings by Professor G. Venkatraman. And today we will continue the talk from last week. So let's listen to a new talk with his continuation from last week.
Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. Thus far, by Swami's grace, I have been able to navigate through 11 chapters of the Gita. And we now stand on the threshold of a very important chapter, namely chapter 12, entitled Bhakti Yoga. Understandably, this is a favorite of many devotees and of course an important one too. In today's talk, I shall deal with Bhakti Yoga. However, I shall not employ the usual format I adopt of first offering a few quotes and then expanding on them. Instead, I shall first say what I wish to on this important subject and then allow you to listen to the whole of chapter 12, sloka by sloka, rendered in the original Sanskrit, accompanied of course by concurrent translation in English. This way you can have the pleasure of an uninterrupted hearing of this most wonderful, beautiful, glorious and of course all-important chapter. With that intro, let me move on. I shall begin with remarks that would connect chapter 12 to the earlier chapters. After Arjuna had been given the cosmic vision of the Lord and he recovers from the shock of that awe-inspiring spectacle, he says, that is Arjuna says, "Krishna, it appears that you have a vast, infinite and almost intangible universal as well as cosmic aspect. On the other hand, you also have the human form in which you now appear before me. You said to me that I should follow you and be devoted to you. I have a doubt. Of these two aspects, namely the formless and the one with form, which should I follow?" This is what I would call a good question. In simple terms, the question boils down to, should one worship the formless God or the God with form? The 12th chapter is essentially Krishna's response to that question of Arjuna. Krishna basically tells Arjuna, "Arjuna, I may be known and attained via both paths, namely the worship of the formless aspect of God as also the personal aspect of God. Both types of worship would ultimately allow you to merge with me. But for you, Arjuna, I would recommend the worship of the personal God." This is a very important point and merits some comments. By the way, the advice that Krishna gave to Arjuna applies to 99.999% of humanity as well, which of course means you and me. Let me now move over to a remark that Swami often makes, which is, "I am in you, above you, below you, beside you, etc., etc." When Swami makes such a remark, we all nod our heads as if we understand. But do we really? At the end of it all, we fail to see God everywhere and always rush for darshan because it is the beautiful form of Swami with which we are able to connect easily. Now, this is a matter of human psychology, and Swami Vivekananda put it very nicely. He said that man is unquestionably an aspect of the formless infinite. However, since he is born in a finite and transient world, he is able to connect more easily with forms than with the formless. Hence, although God is really formless, it is easier for most mortals to deal with the personal God rather than the abstract formless God. That exactly is what Krishna told Arjuna. Saint Tukaram puts it beautifully in one of his songs. He says, "O Krishna, this Tuka is a fool. How can Tuka understand things like infinity and all that So, for Tuka's sake, you have so kindly come with a human form, which I can adore, worship, etc. To get back to the advice that Krishna gave to Arjuna at the beginning of chapter 12, Swami said the same to Hislop. About Bhakti Yoga, Swami told Hislop, quote, Bhakti Yoga is the direct path to God. It is the easy way. All others are useless. End of quote. That's a pretty strong statement. Well, what exactly is this bhakti? We use that word ever so often, but do we know what it really means? We don't have to wonder, because Swami tells us, this is what he says, quote, bhakti is to be identified as the discipline which removes egoism and the limitations of the I and mine, unquote. Swami continues, quote, bhakti is defined as the means of discovering the divine reality within oneself. It directs man to have God in mind and to cultivate love for him, unquote. Note the stress on discovering the divine reality within oneself. But there is an important caveat, and this is what Swami says. Please pay careful attention to it. Quote, you should not worship the Lord as an emergency measure. For many, bhakti is a burqa or a veil that is worn when on a pilgrimage or when visiting temples. Once these people get back home, they discard the veil and with it all feelings of reverence and indeed even remembrance of the Lord. These are but exhibitionist stunts. Bhakti, however, has to be steady and full. It is the establishment of the mind in the Lord under all situations and at all times. Unquote. I call your particular attention to the point that devotion ought not to be an intermittent, on-again, off-again affair. Instead, it must be steady and continuous, with a strong focus on God in all His aspects. As Swami puts it, at the operational level, bhakti simply boils down to placing our mind on God always, no matter what the situation is. The question now arises, okay, we know what bhakti is supposed to be, but is there any prescribed form for it? This is a question that has received much attention from saints over the centuries. And as we have heard Swami tell us so many times, Saint Narada identified 9 types of devotion. I am sure you know what these famous 9 forms of bhakti or devotion are. But for the sake of completeness, let me enumerate them here. They are Shravanam, or listening to the praise of the Lord. Kirtanam, or singing His praise. Vishnu Smaranam, or chanting the name of the Lord. Padasevanam, or serving at the lotus feet of the Lord. Archanam, worshipping the Lord. Vandanam, paying obeisance to the Lord. Dasyam, being the Lord's servant. Sakyam, being the Lord's friend. And Atmanivedanam, surrendering to the Lord. Totally, completely, and without any reservation. Well, these are the 9 forms that practical bhakti can take, so to speak. What it means is that people are free to choose the path that suits their personality best. And in that respect, God is really very kind in offering so many choices. Any particular preferred path? This is what Swami has to say in response. Quote, the Dasya attitude is the easiest, that is the attitude of being the Lord's servant, and it is the best for the majority of the aspirants of today, unquote. This is a very important piece of advice and merits a few explanatory remarks. Basically, in this approach, one tries to become dear to the Lord by being His most loyal servant. And if any example is needed, one cannot think of any better than Hanuman. In fact, as if to stress this, Swami has built a statue of Hanuman, much bigger in size than the statues of all other deities, including Shiva and Krishna. Not only that, Swami has placed the statue at the highest point in Puttaparthi, that is to say, right on top of the hill adjoining the Hillview Stadium. I am sure you have seen that statue. Well, that ought to say it all. A key point about the Dasya attitude is that it implies that the servant surrenders totally to the Lord. This is implied. Now, what does surrender signify or imply? In worldly affairs, a country surrenders to another when defeated in war. For example, at the end of World War II, Japanese troops surrendered to the American forces, and people who have lived through that war would remember that the surrender ceremony took place on board of one of the ships of the American Navy. In such surrenders, there is a victor and a vanquished. Also, there is a sense of defeat and shame associated with surrender. By contrast, when one surrenders to the Lord, there is absolutely no question of humiliation or shame, nor is there any sense of victor and vanquished. Rather, one comes totally under the protection of the Lord. That precisely is what Vibhishana gained by leaving the camp of Ravana, his elder brother, and taking refuge under Lord Rama. In Sanskrit, the word Saranagati is used to denote surrender. Explaining what it means, Swami says, and I quote, "To experience God as omnipresent, to be aware of nothing other than God, that is surrender. To see God in everything, everywhere and at all times is true Saranagati. Once you surrender to the Lord and offer everything at the lotus feet, once you surrender all that is to be done, when it is done and how it is to be done, then He will completely take care of everything Himself." Unquote. Swami further points out that there are three types of surrender, not one but three. Explaining what they are, Swami says, quote, "The first affirms, I am yours. The second asserts, you are mine. And the third declares, you and I are one, the same. Each is a step in the rising series, and the last is the highest of them all. In the first stage, the Lord is fully free and the devotee is fully bound. It's like the cat and the kitten. The cat shifts the kitten about at its will. The kitten just mews and accepts whatever happens. This attitude is very gentle and within the easy reach of all. In the second approach, the devotee binds the Lord, who to that extent is supposed to be unfree. The third stage is one of inseparable devotion." Inseparable, that's the key word. "The devotee offers all to the Lord, including himself, for he feels he cannot withhold himself. This completes his surrender." Unquote. Now comes the question of how exactly to surrender to the Lord. Swami explains that also. He says, quote, "First, the Lord is thought of. Then he is felt. And finally, he is directly experienced. In other words, first the thought turns into a feeling, after which the feeling becomes transformed into a real experience. Not only will you then get the personal darshan of the Lord, but you will also get a chance to converse with him face to face. After seeing the Lord thus and talking to him directly, you will have a little more satisfaction. You now want to reach God and merge with him." The three stages are called Jnatum, Drashtum and Praveshtum. Jnatum means knowing the Lord is here. Drashtum means having a direct vision of him. And Praveshtum means merging with him. These describe the three stages that you must follow to reach the goal. Unquote. Swami then goes on to describe how Krishna explained all this to Arjuna. Swami says, quote, "In teaching this yoga to Arjuna, Krishna gave it in three steps. The first and foremost is, work for me, mat karma krit. Second step is, for my sake alone, mat paramo. The third step is, be devoted only to me, mat bhaktaha." Unquote. Swami then adds, and I quote, "You have to understand the inner significance of this directive, or the inner secret of this directive. Devotion is the expression of love. The emotion which is called love emanates from the Atma. Love has nothing at all to do with the worldly feelings and secular things. Love, which is just another name for devotion, is the very nature of the Atma. This principle of love emanating from the core of the heart must saturate every action, word and thought. This will happen when you think that everything you do, say or think is for the satisfaction of the Lord alone. Unquote. The question now arises, man relates to God via our form, the personal God, that is to say, to the avataric form of God, in our case, Swami. But then, avatars come once in a blue moon, and when they do so, they stay around only for a short period. Once they give up the human form, man has to fall back on folk tales, idols and pictures for relating to God with form, and understandably, he soon begins to forget God, sometimes almost entirely. Of course, this has not escaped Swami's notice, and he has pointed this out on many occasions. In a discourse given in Bangalore on 15th January 2001, if I can recall the date correctly, Swami said that since man forgets God, God out of compassion comes down wearing a human form so that man can see God, after which he can easily love God and serve God and thereby redeem himself. It is interesting that while Judaism has only the formless God, Christianity, which came from Judaism, has Jesus, who is able to hold the focus of devotees intensely, though of course technically Jesus is just the Son of God. The case of Islam that came after Christianity and is the last of the trio of the so-called Abrahamic religions, theology reverts back to the formless God. Able to manufacture them? No. They have all been created by the Lord. Where then is the sacrifice and offering to the Lord, the very things he has himself created? Such devotion can be only called very rudimentary type of devotion. But to offer to the Lord the sacred flowers of your heart, which are not related to this world, and to offer these in loving worship to the one seated in the heart, that is parabhakti, the highest devotion. That is the devotion you should aspire for. Unquote. Swami continues, he says, Ananya Bhakti is one-pointed devotion to God involving total surrender. One should not fragment his mind and offer just one bit of it to God. Hey God, take this little piece. The mind in its entirety must be immersed in the Almighty. A person with a fragmented mind cannot attain Ananya Bhakti. A disintegrated mind is an exercise in futility. Single-minded devotion is the easiest path to salvation. Unquote. Gandhi too made the same point, echoing beautifully, in fact, the entire essence of chapter 12. He says, and I quote, a devotee may use, if he likes, rosaries, forehead marks, make offerings, etc., etc., but these are no test of devotion. He is the true devotee who is jealous of none, who is a fountain of mercy, who is without egotism, who is selfless, who treats alike cold and heat, happiness and mercy, who is ever forgiving, who is always contented, whose resolutions are firm, who has dedicated his mind and soul to God, who causes no dread, who is not afraid of others, who is free from exaltation, sorrow and fear, who is pure, who is versed in action and yet remains unaffected by it, who renounces all fruit, good and bad, who treats friend and foe alike, who is untouched by respect or disrespect, who is not puffed up by praise, who does not go asunder when people speak ill of him, who loves silence and solitude, who has a disciplined reason. Unquote. Nothing is left out. And if you want more assurance, just listen to what Ramakrishna Paramahamsa has to say. Quote, bhakti is of two kinds, Vaidika bhakti and prema bhakti, that is to say devotion based on rituals and devotion based on pure love. To conform to the injunctions of the scriptures, to chant the name of the Lord as many times as prescribed, to fast and to pray, to go on pilgrimage, to perform ritualistic worship with the aid of enjoined materials, all these belong to the former kind. An earnest pursuance of these means leads the devotee ultimately to the latter, that is to prema bhakti, in which there is no place for any kind of earthly attachment. The bhakta gives himself over entirely to the Lord. This wholehearted offering is graciously accepted by the Lord, and the devotee becomes his own. Unquote. Well, I have bombarded with you a lot of quotes, but I guess it ought to make it abundantly clear what true devotion to the Lord really means. Any time we declare ourselves to be a devotee of Swami, I suggest we do a reality check. It is time to wind up, but I cannot do so without a reference to Namasmaranam or the constant chant of the name of the Lord. The importance of Namasmaranam has been stressed in times without number by Swami himself. While we may take it all very casually, many in the past have taken this very seriously as it ought to be. One of them was Saint Tyagaraja, who chanted the name of Rama millions of times, after which he was suddenly blessed to become a great musician come composer. In fact, one cannot think of classical South Indian music today without thinking of Tyagaraja at the same time. Heart to Heart carried a detailed article on Saint Tyagaraja some time ago, and so I shall not repeat all that material here. Gandhi too was another great believer in Namasmarana. In fact, he once declared that chanting the name had become almost as automatic as breathing. There are many virtues in chanting the name, and since Swami has dwelt on all of them at various times, I shall skip that. Maybe I can leave it as a homework for you to dig into Sai literature. But two things I must call your attention to. First is that when chanting the name becomes a habit, one is almost sure to chant the name when one takes the very last breath. And when one does that, permanent merger with the Lord is guaranteed. How do I know? Well, that's what Krishna himself says in the Gita. By the way, Gandhi died with the name of Rama on his lips as he fell to the assassin's bullets at 5:05 p.m. on the evening of 30th January 1948. The second point concerns the name to be chanted. Which name? Well, one of our bhajans gives the answer loud and clear. It says, chant whatever name you want to, but do so with love and deep fervor. Jo naam chahe wo naam gao, prem se bolo, bhav se bolo. In fact, one devotee I gather made it a habit to simply say, Swami, I love you, Swami, I love you, Swami, I love you. That was his namasmarana. Why not? Thanks for listening. Jai Sai Ram.